Welcome to Bacteriophiles, the podcast for microbe lovers. I'm Jesse Noir, here with another awesome story. But first, the microbe of the episode. Its name is Chandipura vesiculovirus. It was first discovered in Chandipura, which is a village in Maharashtra, India. And vesiculovirus is a type of rhabdovirus, which has negative sense single-stranded RNA genomes. So it's made of a single strand of RNA instead of DNA. And when it gets into a cell, it has to generate the complement of this strand, the sequence that binds to it, in order to produce itself and proteins and reproduce. And this group includes vesicular stomatitis virus, which is important in cattle, and it's the same family as the rabies virus. Rhabdovirus has bullet or rod shapes, because rhabdo means rod, and so that's the shape of their particles. And it's vesicular because it induces the cell to form special compartments inside the cell to transport the virus around. So this particular vesiculovirus was found in the blood of two patients in 1965 in Chandipura, and it was associated with outbreaks of encephalitis in India, so infection of the central nervous system in the brain. And so in summer of 2003, 329 children were affected with this, and 183 died, so it can be pretty serious. Not too much is known. It's suspected to be spread by sand flies, similar to Leishmania, the parasite, but it hasn't yet proven to be the cause of the outbreaks, but it's still concerning. Luckily, for everyone outside of India, it hasn't been seen in any other countries, but that can easily change. Now on to the paper. The process of drying out often puts stress on organisms undergoing it, because we're made of about 60 to 70% water. It's a big part of our cells, and it's important for keeping things together in our cells in the right place. Without it, things clump up and react with one another when they are touching inappropriately. And another problem is radiation coming in from everywhere, the sun and radioactivity, gets through more effectively because there's not water to absorb it. So it's pretty impressive when anything can survive desiccation or drying out. One thing that's well known for being able to do that is tardigrades, or little animals that live in water. And they can survive drying up entirely and then rehydrating back to their normal state. But how can they do that? The hypothesis has been that they have molecules that hold things in the right place even when water is not present. One of these is called trehalose, which is two sugar molecules combined together, and other organisms use it for this purpose. It's pretty good, but not all tardigrades actually have been found to make this sugar, so it can't be the only explanation. In episode 292, I talked about tardigrades having radiation resistance by making a protein called DSUP, which protects their DNA directly. But protection against radiation is only part of the question of how they do this, and this protein isn't found in every species, so how do the others do it? Now, scientists publishing in Molecular Cell have discovered that tardigrades can keep their cell contents orderly through desiccation using disordered proteins. The species they were working with is called Hypsibius dujardini. It's not the most extremophilic or extreme tolerant, but it can tolerate drying up if it does so fairly slowly, and if it dries too quickly, then it doesn't survive. And so there must be something it's producing while it's drying to protect its cells, so it needs time to produce that. So first the scientists tried drying the tardigrades slowly, and then rehydrating them, and then drying them much quicker the next time, and they found that the tardigrades could survive the much quicker desiccation after just having been dried out slowly, and so whatever they produce to help them lasts long enough to help them also in the next round of desiccation. So they looked at the genes induced by the desiccation to see which might be important for its resistance. And they did not find any proteins that could produce trehalose, the sugar that helps some other organisms. So it doesn't seem to make that at all. But they found a bunch of proteins that were upregulated when drying out that were common in the cell and soluble under heat. And so this property is indicative of a protein that is disordered. That is, it doesn't have any stable structure. We're often taught in biology that protein function is dependent on the structure of the protein. You have the amino acid sequence with the particular side chains that fold together into a particular structure with helices called alpha helices and then sheets called beta sheets. And then these fold together into a particular shape. So you have like a lock and you put in a key molecule that gets modified somehow. And then you have sulfide bonds between certain amino acids holding it all together. And generally, we're taught that the wrong folding means that it's a bad protein and it needs to be broken down and remade. But we've been discovering that a large percentage of proteins in life actually have a region that's disordered, or the whole protein is disordered. They actually don't have a stable structure. They're constantly shifting around the positions of their amino acids relative to each other. And despite this, they play a lot of important roles in different cell functions, especially with regulation of the cell behavior and development and organization. So this is a fascinating change in paradigm of biology, where we thought that structure was important. Now we're finding out that lack of structure can also be important. Now, these proteins that they found in the tardigrades are pretty unique to tardigrades as far as we have discovered so far. The scientists looked for these disordered proteins in other tardigrade species. For example, Paramacrobiotis richtersi is like H. dudergini in that it is tolerant to slow drying and it produces proteins like this as it is drying. And there's another species called Milnesium tardigradum, which can tolerate drying more quickly, and it produces these disordered proteins constitutively, which means all the time. It's not just when it's being desiccated. It has them around just in case it needs them really fast. So that is very indicative that they are helpful for that, for toleration of desiccation. But we can't just guess at functions. We have to prove what the proteins are actually doing. So the scientists used RNAi, or RNA interference, to disrupt the expression of the disordered proteins. So they put in RNA sequences, little short pieces that bound to the RNAs translated to produce these proteins. And this interfered with the proteins' RNAs and prevented them from being translated. So that meant there was no genetic modification going on, but it did prevent the proteins from being produced in the tardigrades. And by doing this, they found that none of these disordered proteins were needed for survival when the cells and the tardigrades were hydrated fully, when they had plenty of water. But some of the proteins were very important and needed for survival when the tardigrades were being dehydrated. Without them, the survival decreased a lot. So then they ask, can these disordered proteins protect things other than tardigrades? So they expressed the genes in yeast and in bacteria, particularly E. coli. They found that some of them could increase the survival under desiccation of these microbes 100 times or more. Even in other species it works. And it could also be used to preserve individual proteins when mixed with them and dehydrated. They tested an enzyme called lactate dehydrogenase, which is pretty sensitive to dehydration. It kind of sounds ironic, but not really. And the tardigrade protein preserved 100% of the activity of this enzyme. That's even better than trehalose. What's the mechanism for the activity of these proteins? The authors proposed two possibilities, something called vitrification, which instead of crystallizing as the water is removed, things would form a glass-like matrix and just stop moving around, but without forming any crystals. So the proteins just hold everything in place. And then there's also water replacement. So the protein would take the place of water in holding things in the correct position and just be like water does. And it would still be liquidish, but it's not possible for the protein to evaporate. It could be a mix of these two effects, but it is known that tardigrades can vitrify, and they found that these disordered proteins do vitrify in this case. They confirmed this by heating the protein-producing yeast that they had engineered above what's called the glass transition temperature, where it's too warm for things to stay together as a solid, so they kind of melt. So once they're no longer vitrified, the contents of the cells are not protected. And they did find that the yeast didn't survive desiccation above this temperature. So the proteins helped them below it, but not above it. So that is indicative that it's vitrification that's going on. So this could be pretty useful, knowing about these proteins. It could be used to preserve important materials, like you could make more shelf-stable pharmaceuticals, especially biologics or probiotics, maybe even helping to preserve organs to have them ready to transplant. It could be that we could engineer them into crops to make them more drought-resistant. We'll just have to see. It seems to work with wherever you need to form an amorphous blob that holds things in place. That's how the disordered proteins are probably working in this case. They can rearrange their structure to fit different situations as needed. It's not inherent to all disordered proteins, though. Not all of them that they found, even in the tardigrades, had the ability to protect them from desiccation. It was also interesting that they found that these proteins don't protect the tardigrades against freezing. The problem with freezing is that ice crystals form from the water and cause damage to structures by being sharp. And so the proteins don't seem to prevent this from happening, but they do work well with desiccation. It's always interesting to learn how creatures survive extreme conditions. That's all for today's Bacteriophiles. Send comments or questions to bacteriophiles@gmail.com. Comment at bacteriophiles.com, support the show on Patreon, or leave a review on iTunes. Another good podcast you should check out about the science and history of food is called Gastropod at gastropod.com. The music on this show was made by VFD. Bacteriophiles is a proud member of the American Society for Microbiology family of podcasts, available at asm.org.